Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, August 30th, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Darren Kitchen.
I'm Sarah Lane.
Behind the boards, our excellent producer, Eric Lanigan.
One at a time, please.
This is the show. We're so excited we have to
do this.
It was a collision.
That's my fault.
I didn't write an order in the introduction.
It's like a Shaw-1 collision.
It's okay.
We need introduction traffic directors next time.
We do. Should we just decide it's clockwise?
That's how it's been for the last couple.
That's always how we did it on Buzz Out Loud.
Actually, it's never how we've done it on the show.
Counterclockwise.
Because I always read how Tom writes it. But yeah. I'm flexible.
I just the big
you
orange flags.
You want to just say clockwise and be done with it?
I think that's the way we should go.
The big
orange
flags.
Air traffic control failed us.
Oh, you look so cool like those guys on the carriers.
I'm Sarah Lane.
Remember the intro of Top Gun with those guys? Yeah. Awesome.
Anyway, we do have tech news to talk about. Nintendo is going to drop the price on their DSi, DSi XL, starting September 12th by 20 bones.
Yep.
20 bones
all
is
about
not
the
that
Jacksons.
Many bones.
It's not that many bones, actually.
I mean, if they're trying to sell a bunch of units.
If you found 20 bucks in your pants pocket, though, you'd be excited.
I'd be
right?
thrilled. But if you're talking about something that's over $100... If you're trying to move a lot of units, something like $50 deduction would be like, wow, cool. Good on you, Nintendo. 20 is like, not that much.
Nintendo DSi would be $150, while the new suggested retail price for the DSi XL would be $170. The DS Lite does not get a price reduction. It continues to be sold for $130.
Well, the DS Lite is also like a generation old at this point. It's selling for $130. Supposedly, its build cost is only $90. And this is, you know, Nintendo we're talking about. So they typically don't lose any money on their hardware here. But I'm afraid that this drop... I mean, you have to do a drop when you come out with a new console. You know, we all know that that the 3DS is coming. So it makes perfect sense that they would drop the price, you know, in lieu of that, but by dropping only $20 makes me concerned that the 3DS is going to be a little bit more pricey than we would want it to be otherwise.
Could there also be the, if you drop it too much, then you'll sell so many units that people might be like, well, the 3GS looks great, but I did just buy this other one. You know, it's like you want to sell a certain amount of units, but not so many that people are like, well, I've just got this. I should hold off on the 3DS.
That bears out what Darren's saying, which is they don't want to take the prices too far down or they become that barrier to buying the 3DS. They want the 3DS to be close enough that if you're like, well, for only $20 more than the DSi XL, I could just get the 3DS. I can't believe they're still selling the DS Lite. Right?
Yeah, the DS. Well, I mean, they must have just a ton of them.
They must have made a bunch, yeah. Also, does this mean no one's going to buy a mobile console from Nintendo between now and September 12th? Like, that's kind of far out. That's a couple of weeks out to announce a price cut. Usually you announce them the day you make the price cut.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Unless they knew there was going to be a leak and they're like, well, might as well throw it out there now.
That wouldn't be the first time this has happened with Nintendo recently. So
that's true.
Maybe they need to get a hold of that.
Intel is still buying stuff. They're just crazy. They bought McAfee, if you remember, and now they are buying Infineon's wireless unit for $1.4 billion. They announced this late Sunday. This is the wireless unit of Infineon that makes the baseband processors.
Right, so all of your CDMA chips, your GSM chips, the chips that actually speak with the carrier, that's great because if anybody's poised to do some awesome finesse with it, it's the manufacturer of the chip that actually powers the smartphone's computer, if you will.
And the iPad as well.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, conceivably, with Intel owning both the application processors that they already make and now owning the baseband processors that Infineon makes, they could combine those into one smaller, more power-efficient package that's on one board and allow you to make smaller, longer battery life mobile devices.
Yeah, it's just like when you got, you know, your integrated sound card on your motherboard. It's very similar.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So this is a lot of people in writing about this today are calling it the last piece in Intel's mobile package. They've been buying mobile technologies and mobile companies now for a little bit, so they're just kind of piecing it all together. And it'll come with McAfee.
Now, they also, Intel sold to Marvell in 2006, sort of this whole, they kind of were like, well, this whole mobile thing, I don't know what to do with this. So that was, what, 4 years ago now?
Yeah, right.
A lot has changed in 4 years. Now mobile is the big thing. Smartphones, they got to get back in.
Yeah, so they just, I mean, when you're Intel, you just throw down some cash. Like, go, oh, let's buy that Infineon one.
We'll buy you. Yeah, yeah. You're good.
Thanks.
You do good chips. We've got a plan.
Infineon still will make its other products, though, and I would assume still sponsor the Raceway, right?
I'm new
to this. I hadn't even thought about
that. Infineon Raceway right over here.
You know, I still call it Sears Point.
Yeah.
So,
now, is that
old school.
Is Sears Point the actual name of that area, or was that a sponsorship from Sears?
That's a very good question. It was Sears Point when I was a kid growing up, but I don't know if it was ever something before Sears Point. Someone in the chat room who knows a little bit about Raceways probably has the answer.
You know how companies in San Francisco always go out to Giants games? Twitch should go to the Raceway, because that's like the nearest major sport arena.
Isn't there like
a already about to
up?
Puke.
I've heard.
Well, you know why? It's because it can get really hot at that Raceway.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like the wrong time of year, a NASCAR event. It's like, oh, just I'm just hot thinking about it.
Yeah.
Boiling out there.
Really? I don't know. I could use some hot.
Like, yeah?
I could definitely
use
some.
You live in the East Bay. It's not hot enough for you out there?
No, it's cold.
Oh.
Yeah. A lot more fog than up here.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Not as much as San Francisco, but.
Well, maybe we should go to a NASCAR event. I can just douse myself with beer or something to keep cool.
That's all you need.
Workout.
I douse myself with beer on the inside quite often. BlackBerry is getting a 60-day India ban reprieve. If you recall, tomorrow was the last day BlackBerry was going to be allowed to operate many of their messenger-type services in India, unless they had come into agreement to allow India to monitor the messages that go through BlackBerry's private networks. BlackBerry had suggested, well, let's have a forum where we get all the telcos in India together and we talk about this, because really there's no easy way to let you monitor this. We've been through this before. We don't make special deals with countries. And India said, no, we don't like that decision. But then today they kind of relented part way and said they will delay the ban on BlackBerry devices for 60 days while they review proposals from the gadget maker, Research in Motion. That's what the BBC says. That's why I read it so weirdly. So they're going to take 60 days to review this stuff. That gives RIM a lot more time to actually come up with a plan. They have located servers within countries before. So when they say we've never done a special deal, yes and no. I mean,
they don't want to continue to do this.
They definitely do not. And it's turning into a pattern. If India wins this, then you know what's going to happen in United Arab Emirates and Lebanon and Jordan and Singapore and other countries who have expressed their trepidation at allowing BlackBerry Messenger to continue operating in their country without having a way to monitor.
Although I think it depends on how many people in the particular country are using RIM products.
Yeah.
Not enough people, then they might go, no, sorry, we said we weren't going to negotiate with individual countries.
We're
just not going to do this.
They're not going to
Somewhere like
really
India, though, anyway. You have too many people at stake here. They have to play.
They've opened a can of worms.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yep.
It's a bit too late now.
Tasty, tasty can of worms. Nice to eat. Let's take a moment to thank our sponsor, Audible.com. Of course, Audible is the purveyor of audiobooks galore. More than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature. They've got fiction. They've got nonfiction. A lot of times people forget they have periodicals. You can listen to Scientific American out of the Audible store.
I have yet to do that.
What a
missed opportunity.
Way. I do that with some magazines where I get the magazine, but then I also get the audio version because there are times when I'm in the car or something, I can't read a magazine, but I could listen to it and catch up on some articles that way. It's the same advantage to having an audiobook, except in magazine form. And of course, they have tons of books, all kinds of books. In fact, if you're a Tech News Today listener, Audible is offering you a free audiobook. So whether you want to try an issue of a magazine or a full-on book, I just finished The Moon is a Harsh Mistress on Audible. By Robert Heinlein.
Happy with it?
Great book to listen on audio because of the accent. I have mentioned this before, but it's written with a Russian accent in mind. People are like, what do you mean written with a Russian accent? Well, they change the syntax and the spellings of words and use little Russian words here and there. So much easier to follow when you're actually listening to it because the guy's got a Russian accent. It all makes sense.
Maybe I'll go with Shogun for my free audiobook.
Oh, yeah, Shogun.
I never get into it because
James Clavell.
It's such a big book, but maybe I could make it like an audiobook project over.
That's one of the nice things about
however long it'll take me.
Audiobooks, you can know exactly how long it's going to take you to read it.
Yeah.
You can allocate that time.
I like that. Yeah. I like that.
So, download your audiobook for free. Any one you want. One of the ones we've mentioned or one you've just been having your eye on for a long time, didn't think you had time to get around to reading it. Audiblepodcast.com/TNT. That's audiblepodcast.com/TNT. Go try one now. You can just put us on pause and come back to us after you get the book. We'll be here.
Unless we're watching it live.
Do come back.
And then you'll miss some stuff.
And finish, though.
Buffers. Yeah. You can pause. It'll buffer.
Well, you could pause. Well, you could leave the live one and then come back and finish the podcast later.
Yeah.
Or you could, if you're watching live, just open
just
a tab.
Just turn off Twitter because everyone will ruin it for you.
Let's just agree to finish TNT and then we'll go look for our books.
I think that's what
you could do it in a tab at the same time. Just saying. Okay, angry Dig users are flooding the Dig homepage with links to Reddit. Reddit and Dig are often seen as competitors. They do things in a little bit of a different way, but
Dig's also bigger overall.
There's a feud between their users sometimes, and Dig users are upset about the changes in Dig. About some of the features that were in Dig 3 that disappeared in Dig 4, about the fact that it looks like companies have a better chance of getting their stories on the homepage than just your average user, because they have these feeds now that feed all of your links from your website into. So Wired, Ars Technica, all these companies have these feeds. And so today, they gamed the system, or at least that's the allegation, is that somebody gamed the system to get Reddit all over the front of Dig.
Which worked.
Yeah.
It was all over the
place. In fact, there's still a bunch of Reddit stuff up there.
The whole Dig thing is, it's tough because, so the other day over the weekend, I was like, gosh, you know, Dig people have been complaining for a few days now. I happen to like version 4. It works a lot better for me, just personally, being able to follow people that I know a little bit better and then be able to look at the top stories in a different tab. But that aside, on the homepage, what are just the top stories? And it was like 10 Mashable stories. And it did seem like, what? Why is Mashable all over the homepage of Dig? I mean, that's not normal. That's weird. So I looked and it's like Mashable has created a bunch of different feeds based on their, you know, their green channel and their mobile channel and, you know, this and that, which is, that's, I don't know, if they're allowed to do it, they're not doing anything wrong. But I can see as a user who's seen Dig, who's used to Dig working in a certain way for obviously a number of years now, going, well, Dig and Mashable must be in bed together in some sense, right? Because why are they all over you know, there's somebody's getting something out of this. I don't know if that's true. To my knowledge, it isn't, but I can see how that could be very frustrating.
Well, I'm looking at the Dig homepage right now, and obviously Dig and Reddit are in bed together because Reddit's got all kinds of stories up here.
That's a real conspiracy.
I'm just surprised that something on a social network changed and the users freaked out.
I mean, it's so surprising.
So weird.
It's shocking, isn't it?
What could possibly, what could they not like about change?
Yeah. Especially when you take a hardcore audience like Dig that is, you know, has
Dig is historically not liked change.
I mean, they're called Dig users for a reason.
Because they use Dig.
Well, that too, yeah.
Kevin Rose
because
was on This Week in Tech.
They've
created a name for themselves is what I'm getting at here.
Right. Mm-hmm. Kevin Rose was on This Week in Tech yesterday, and it's worth a listen because he goes into all these problems and addresses them and basically says, we took some of these features away because we needed to get Dig 4 working.
Yeah.
We need to make it, we need to launch it and make it work, and we're going to try to put these back. They've already reinstated a few of the Dig 3 features, and they're going to try to add more. They're trying to get the thing stable. I mean, one of the reasons I haven't talked about it much on TNT is that every time I go to try to use it, I get the little Oregon Trail graphic because it's been down a lot. So I've been waiting for it to stabilize so I can actually use it and form an opinion about it.
Right. A lot of users aren't just mad because they think there's something going on behind the scenes. It's because the whole system isn't working very well.
Yeah.
Now, that's to be expected. With new versions, it would be great if they're flawless out of the gate, but sometimes it takes a couple weeks
And sometimes when the stability shakes up, you got to turn off features here or there.
Exactly.
Just tweak it so that you can keep the core functionality going.
Earlier today, they froze manual story submissions for a while just so they could work on it.
These Reddit people.
You've ever had experience with that, Darren?
No, never.
Managing
my servers have always stayed up.
You never had
That's
to freeze
why my lower
anything.
Third says hack5.org right now. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And there goes your site.
I know. Again.
All right, Samsung, this, you know, usually when we report a story like this, 1 million phones sold in 45 days, you would assume it's Apple, but it's Samsung this time, with the Samsung Galaxy S in its two forms that are sold on AT&T, the Captivate, and T-Mobile, the Vibrant. They have sold 1 million of these in 45 days, not quite as fast as an iPhone has sold, but when you consider that they did virtually no marketing for this, there was no big Steve Jobs-like announcement, there was no big TV campaign.
They didn't get the Google homepage like the Droid.
And people are just looking at it. You can get a Vibrant for free. I mean, you can just sign a contract and get a deal at some places. So people are looking at this and saying, oh, wait, I'm sorry, not the Vibrant, the Captivate. People are looking at this price saying, well, yeah, I guess I could spend $200 on an iPhone, but wow, that Captivate looks pretty darn good. It works really well, and it's got Android. I'll get that one for free. Why not? Price wins in this case.
Doesn't price always win?
Not always. No, right. I think Apple is proof of that.
Exactly.
Well.
But this is also proof that there are people who are interested in buying things other than iPhones. You know, the whole argument of like, well, if the iPhone was just available on all carriers, then that's all anybody would have. Right. I don't think that's true. I don't think that's true at all.
I think people that is becoming less and less true all the
less
time.
Less and less true. Android is growing like a weed. And some people don't want anything to do with the iOS.
And it's only going to get better for Samsung because they're coming to Verizon and Sprint later on this year.
Right? So there you have it.
Yeah. Sprint's Epic 4G is, we'll get to that in the calendar. That's going on sale tomorrow.
Samsung.
Watch out for Samsung. Also, watch out for Google. Always. But in this case, because they're in talks with major studios to rent movies via YouTube. They've been renting movies on YouTube for a while, actually.
I was surprised. Since January, they kind of quietly started testing it, I guess, to see what the response would be. And I had no idea.
Yeah, what they're trying to do here, they've created a rental section on YouTube already. And there's a ton of indie movies in there. And they want to strike a deal with major Hollywood studios to make YouTube on-demand video service available simultaneously with DVD release for around $5. At least that's what the Financial Times is reporting. I think that's a great idea.
I mean, isn't Netflix already 30 days behind because of, well, with some of the studios
their actual physical DVD rentals are 30 days behind. I don't know about their streaming. I think their streaming is sometimes farther.
Yeah.
And sometimes not. But they did that so they could widen the catalog of streaming, essentially.
Right. And I think this is great because if anybody's going to be able to do this, Google is large enough that they can, and they are on a plethora of devices already. But I'm not holding my breath to see whether or not all of those devices might be compatible. I mean, you said yourself you've got a TV that's got Google.
Yeah, I've got a Bravia that's got a YouTube widget.
Yeah.
So I can launch the widget and watch videos that way. But I don't know if it's going to work with some rental service that hasn't been set up. Well, I don't know. I should try.
Yeah, that's what I'm loving to see.
Like, because this TV is not very old, but it's over a year old.
Right.
Well, exactly.
Actually, it's under a year old.
How do you integrate that payment system
in an
elegant way to all these different services? There's YouTube on the Apple TV. Would you allow rentals
there? By the
way, these
widgets aren't very elegant on my TV anyway.
There's YouTube on the Roku. There's YouTube on your television. But how do you make that? I mean, so easily they could make these rentals available. It's just, how do you get people to pay for them? Are they going to integrate with PayPal?
Other than the Google set-top box,
Google
which
checkout.
I'm not holding my breath about.
Yeah, well, it's obviously going to go into the set-top box, that's for sure. And they're talking about integrating with PayPal for stuff, rather than just Google checkout, at least in the Android store. So could they do that for YouTube as well?
But if they integrate with PayPal, will someone take all my money?
You will, in renting all those great movies. $5 a pop. If this comes true, though, if they do strike this deal, it's going to be a huge 180 from 5 years ago when the studios were crying for blood and Viacom began their suit and NBC and Fox got together and started Hulu to crush YouTube because all they have is pirated videos and videos of cats. And as soon as we get rid of their pirated videos, they'll die and Hulu will crush them. Crush them, I tell you. That's how they talked. And it hasn't turned out that way.
No.
And so YouTube will only get huger if they add major Hollywood studio videos, don't you think?
Yeah, YouTube's already on the campaign to change the image of these are just crappy videos of cats or, you know, people hurting themselves by running into trees and things like that. You know, there's YouTube series and there's a whole division. And the Google TV, I mean, that's
Yeah.
And I don't even know and
they've just got such a platform that's everywhere that maybe they could, you know, push out, like maybe some of the different device manufacturers could push that out so that it's just, oh, hey, it's just a click. It's built into my TV.
Right.
You know, and I love the idea that just push out an update and maybe, maybe we could have that functionality.
People in chat room are pointing out there's nothing wrong with cat videos.
Oh, I prefer them over almost anything else, but I am not necessarily
not
majority in every circle.
The feline here.
As well, you shouldn't.
No.
They have claws.
That's right. And then they know how to use them. Oxford English Dictionary might never go into print again.
What? Tom, how will we know how to spell anything? How will we win at Scrabble?
We're talking about the 20-volume Oxford English Dictionary. Ooh. If you have the, what's it called?
The one that comes out every 50 years or so?
Yeah, the first, it's only in the second edition. The first edition came out in 1928, I believe, if
good,
I remember that right.
Year.
The second edition came out in 1989, and the third edition is still being worked on. They have 28% of it complete.
So another decade or so.
Yeah, a decade or two, maybe.
So the idea that, knowing how quickly the whole ebook revolution has ramped up in just the last few years, if we're talking another 10 years out on the old Oxford English, I could see that not being a print version.
Yeah, now there's the Oxford Dictionary of English, which is a single volume one. It's similar to a Merriam-Webster. It's the one you buy at the bookstore, and that's not what we're talking about. The Oxford English Dictionary.
This is more of like an encyclopedia level.
Yeah, this is huge. You can buy a compact version that's in two volumes, but you have to get a magnifying glass because all they've done is they've shrunk the text down incredibly small. I have that.
It's the British way.
It's pretty awesome.
You've still got it, but you're going to need a
And they
glass.
Do have the Oxford English Dictionary second edition available online. Some of it's available for free, some of it with a subscription. So it's already digital. But what started this all off is Nigel Portwood, chief executive of the Oxford University Press, did an interview with the Sunday Times of London, which you can read if you have a subscription, and said the print dictionary market is disappearing. It's falling away by tens of percent a year. They asked him, do you think that the third edition of OED would be printed? He said, I don't think so. Adding that he thought print dictionaries in general might vanish completely within 30 years. Now that set up a hubbub, and Oxford University Press quickly came out with a press release that says no decision has yet been made on the format of the third edition. It's likely to be more than a decade before the full edition is published. But I think it's fair to say what Nigel Portwood was trying to get across was by the time we get around to publishing this, we may not need to print anything anymore. So, yeah, it's likely we wouldn't make a print version.
Or what if you just make a print version and just make a few million fewer copies or something? Yeah. I don't even know how many. You know, it's like...
There's got to be at least one print copy so that 100
million
Someone's
going to want the physical copy, and probably a lot fewer people will in 10 years.
I think
plus.
You're right. I think it would be wrong to say you'll not print any copies.
Because some people just want that.
And
probably would.
Yeah,
want
sure.
a physical.
I'm nerdy like that.
I know you and your library stuff.
Well, the libraries are going to want a printed copy.
Exactly.
And hopefully that will be there so that, you know, in 100 billion years when the aliens come, they'll
I think we're missing the bigger point here, though, which is, they've got 28% of the work done on the next one. Why isn't that available online? Just the thing about online is you don't have to wait and come out with an edition.
Yeah, why hold it back?
You just continually update it all the time. And then when you get the third edition done and you finalized it, then you would print one or put it out on CD-ROM or as an ebook or whatever the publishing model is at that time.
Mail
holographic room that you sit in and let the definitions fly around
you. Just imagine, you know, opening up your e-reader and then downloading your Oxford English Dictionary updates, you know?
Sweet.
Get your service pack on. It's going to be good. Check out the diffs.
Yes.
See
yeah.
what's new in the readme.
Right.
I'd read the readme.
And then they'll recall service pack 2, not stable.
Yeah.
There are some bad words in there.
There's bad words. That definition is giving me a virus.
Made me look really
Maybe
stupid
they should just follow
tonight,
the Urban Dictionary model.
Yeah. Well, an indication that we are living in the future is jetpacks are finally on sale. Jetpacks have been around forever, but you couldn't buy one. But we now have...
We're talking about the jetpacks that you put on and then you fly around.
Yes.
Those kinds of jetpacks.
Credit card
making sure.
Right now.
Rocket belts.
Yes. Rocket belts.
Mexican startup Tecnología Aeroespacial Mexicana offers a custom-built TAM rocket belt for $250,000, which includes flight and maintenance training.
Mm.
On a full tank of hydrogen peroxide, the belt weighs 124 to 139 pounds and provides 30 seconds of flight.
I'm putting my credit card
hydrogen
back.
Hydrogen peroxide.
You could dye your hair.
Exactly. I was going to say. You might bleach your clothing, but you'll have a lot of fun doing it.
You'll be able to cure your scratches from the crash landing when you fly 30 seconds straight up in the air and then don't have enough to come down.
The training's included, TAM. I'd like them to be really, really knowledgeable about
That's why the guy in the photo looks like the Stig. You know, it's because all the dye. Yeah.
There's also Jetpack International, a Colorado-based company that sells what it calls the world's longest flying jetpack. Because it goes in the air for 33 seconds.
33 seconds?
Three seconds longer than TAM's model. The H202 weighs 139 pounds and is competitively priced at $155,000, flight classes and all.
So competitive.
Miles an hour.
I'm telling you, man. Why would you go with the TAM?
Hold off on the 3DS.
The H202, 33. You get three more seconds and $100,000 less.
You just need to couple that with like a motorcycle and a ramp off the Golden Gate Bridge. And then like right at the nick of time, you hit the button. And
now, Jetpack International, their founder, Troy Widgery, did point out if something goes wrong, you can get killed.
Oh, never mind. We're not going to do that thing you just said.
So, you know.
Side effects include death.
Yes, exactly. you have to take that account before you run out and drop down that $200,000 that I know you have sitting in your back pocket.
You know, skydiving is kind of a rush, too, and it's a lot less money.
And it also has a possible side effect of death.
But what if you were looking for a thrill, but you didn't have a lot of time?
It's like the opposite of skydiving. You go up.
Yeah.
You're against gravity.
Yeah, but with skydiving, you got to get on a plane. You got to come back down. There's a parachute involved. With this, you just strap on your bucket belt.
It's still only like 150.
You go up for 30 seconds, and then you're done. You're onto something new. You got money to throw away, but you only got a little time for fun. This is your thing.
You've got to really think about what you're going to do in those last few seconds, because 33 seconds is up, and you're,
I'm pretty sure after the first second, I'm already like, where am I
going to
land?
It's great for going down to the corner store.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't do that with skydiving.
Nope.
I'm walking a block. I got a jetpack.
Exactly.
I paid 200,000 bones
for this.
I've
got a mother effing jetpack, and I'm going to use it.
Where's my peroxide?
Yeah, think about your wake.
Honey, I need to fill up the jetpack. All right, on to the news fuse. According to the Telecommunications Market Commission's blog from Spain, Chile has become the first country to guarantee net neutrality by law. The law assures that any internet user will be able to use, send, receive, or offer any content, applications, or legal services over the internet without arbitrary or discriminatory blocking. So congratulations, Chile. Good luck getting your packets out of your country.
Goodbye, ATI. AMD officially announced its plans to label its next round of graphics cards AMD Radeon and AMD Fire Pro with new logos and everything. AMD bought ATI 4 years ago, RIP.
Chat Roulette version 2 is relaunched with a simpler interface and still the same content appearing on camera. Yeah, that content. Users without video cameras have also reported the inability to use any portion of the site.
Which may be a benefit for them. Xbox Live Gold is going to raise its prices. US, UK, Canada, and Mexico folks start November 1st. The 1 month price goes from $8 to $10. The 3 month price goes from $20 to $25. And the year price goes from $50 to $60. Although Microsoft's going to run a lock-in promo for a discounted $40 one-year gold subscription starting November 1st. So get out there and stock up on those Xbox Live cards.
TechCrunch is reporting that one of their sources tells them Cisco has made an offer to acquire Skype before Skype completes its initial public offering of stock. Google was also be rumored to be interested, but antitrust concerns apparently have scared them off.
Yeah, then they would own everything SIP and VoIP related.
Clearwire just launched a Rover service, which offers 4G starting at $5 a day and costing $20 a week or $50 a month. It only uses 4G, and you do need to buy a $150 Rover puck or a $100 USB stick.
I'm shocked to learn that Google has backed out of the Java 1 conference. Google's Joshua Block said in a blog post, Oracle's recent lawsuit against Google and open source has made it impossible for us to freely share our thoughts about the future of Java and open source generally. Oracle bought Java when they bought Sun and have been pissing people off right and left ever since.
Oracle needs to be careful how they pick their battles, because even if they win this, they're still just going to, you know, cause a lot of fragmentation within their developer community. And as we know from open source, it's really the developers that choose what platforms are going to thrive.
Yeah, they closed Solaris. What do they care?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we could all just switch to C for our Android needs, since Android does run C.
Or let's splinter Java more.
Yeah, we could do that.
Question for you, gentlemen.
Yes.
And ladies listening. Would you like your iPad to work like Microsoft Surface? Because sure. Bertrand Duplat and Etienne Meunier, my French is pretty bad, at Volumique say they have something like that working. One example they're using is a board game. The pieces would be recognized when placed on the iPad screen, would even recognize which direction they were facing. Think of the possibilities.
Warhammer.
D&D.
Definitely. Yeah.
Chutes and Ladders.
Monopoly.
I don't have any more.
Hi-ho Chariot.
Checkers.
Oh, Pokemon cards. I don't play those.
Me either.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it can recognize cards, too, not just
pieces. Did you see the video, though? I mean, the guy's really pushing it down on the screen, you know?
Well, you know. But it works.
Okay, it works.
The pieces would probably have to be weighted.
I imagine
it's not like you could just make up your own things that were sort of like flimsy or.
Well, yeah, but I imagine like chess and stuff, you know, and that would be really, really cool, especially, I don't know, with the graphics and everything. It would make
it's
it awesome.
Still pretty nifty, yeah, I have to say.
It's pretty nifty.
Yeah.
Well, it's a little bit of, you know, you're using real world.
I saw a D&D.
Hand-carved chess pieces on the iPad.
We did a piece from PAX where some people had, some university kids had put together a D&D game based on Microsoft Surface. Really slick stuff.
Oh, that sounds cool. All right. Google and the band Arcade Fire have teamed up to show off what HTML5 can do. It's best viewed in Chrome. But it takes the song We Used to Wait and then incorporates Google Maps satellite view and Google Street View to actually show your childhood home woven into the video.
So we're playing the video now, and actually it takes like a good minute to get into it.
Reminiscent.
But what you do is, yeah, you type in your address, the same thing that you would do with, you know, if you wanted to look at your old house on Google Street View. And then it sort of has this clever way of incorporating it into any address. Yeah, yeah. The idea is it's trying to tug
on the heartstrings.
Totally.
Here. Yeah.
Tom and I both tried it, and we both went. Tom said, "Well, it didn't really get my address right. It was like nearby.
It didn't seem like I never saw my actual childhood home. Like it didn't have the impact. So I never actually looked and went like, oh yeah, there's the house I grew up in." And then the satellite photos are low res for that area.
Yeah.
So it was just kind of
That's
goofy
the problem
looking.
I had with mine, too, because I lived so far out in the sticks that they've never actually scanned anything good enough. So the house that I really care about the most, it didn't really work that well. So I had to choose a house I lived in that was within the city limits.
Well, we try to hear it.
Boy,
the
for a country girl, that was a big deal.
The parking lots look amazing here. You know,
the parking lots are breathtaking.
So this is actually our neighborhood in Petaluma where we are right now. So I'm not feeling a lot of nostalgia because I've only worked here for a few months. But maybe in a few years, I'll be crying watching this.
And, you know, regardless of the heartstrings, I think this should be the new acid test, as Tom has showed us with his browser, at least, that if you want to see what your browser is capable of, try this.
Best viewed in Chrome. Doesn't work in IE at all. Can work in Firefox.
It's worth noting that I had tweeted this link out earlier and said, hey, you know, if you like lived in one single home when you were growing up, this is probably going to work better for you than for me. And I had a flood of responses from people going, oh my gosh, that was so amazing. Thank you so much. So I do think it just depends on what address you're putting in and what it means to you.
YMMV.
Look at that. They're coloring the photos, or they're coloring the Google Street View to look older, to look like an age photograph.
Like a sepia tone to it, yeah.
Is it sepia?
Okay, yeah. Who knows? One of those.
More like just faded Kodachrome.
If we had the Oxford English Dictionary here, we might know.
Seriously, I'm going to go look it
up. See, look at that park. That's a beautiful parking lot.
I remember growing up in that parking lot.
I remember parking.
The parking lots.
How many times have I not parked in there because it's limited to 2 hours?
Well, maybe you would remember
every day.
Where we were parking.
Every day.
Let's move on to the calendar. We mentioned the Epic 4G earlier.
Yeah, Epic 4G launches tomorrow. It's going to be $250.
Sign me up.
So start saving your pennies. Keyboard.
This has really made me take back what I said earlier about the Droid Pro, because Droid Pro, 4-inch, and I said there's no way, because it was wishful thinking that they would pop a keyboard in that. Well, I don't know. Epic can bring it, so what you got, Motorola? But yeah, definitely. If I don't have service by the end of the day, I'm definitely going to Sprint tomorrow.
Also on the calendar, as of today, Roku is offering their Roku SD, HD, and HD XR products for $59.99, $69.99, and $99.99, respectively. Darren, you're also a Roku user, so you'd be excited about this. Well, unless
$60
you already have one
Roku
and you're not
like
going to buy another
the
one.
The least expensive and most bang for the buck media center that you can get, you know, $60.
What does the XR have that the HD alone doesn't?
It's got the N Wi-Fi.
Okay.
Yeah, they all have Wi-Fi built in. The SD obviously is standard def, HD is high def, and the XR has the dual Wi-Fi and a USB port, so you can add storage to it.
Oh, that's cool.
Play stuff off
of it. Got it.
TWiT will be at Dragon Con on Saturday night, September 4th. Well, we're going to be there all weekend. We're going to be streaming live, so check out our special coverage. But we're going to have a meetup specifically Saturday night, September 4th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Sundial Restaurant, top of the West in Peachtree in downtown Atlanta. You don't need to be going to Dragon Con to come to the meetup. You can just come on down, brave the crowds, find a parking space, come up to the sundial. It rotates, but it's not very fast, so don't worry. If you are coming, we would appreciate it if you'd let us know, RSVP to Lisa at twit.tv, so we can get a head count and kind of know how many people to expect. But we're looking forward to seeing you there. Veronica Belmont from Sword and Laser is going to be there. Brian Brushwood will be there briefly, I think. He's going to try to hang out at the beginning before he heads off to his magic show. So do come by and check it out. On to the voicemails. 260-TNT-SHOW is our voicemail number, and we got one from a caller who has a question about the clothing we mentioned that could have batteries woven into it.
Hey, guys. This is Kevin in Kansas City. I was just listening to the show last week about the spray-on batteries and embedding batteries in fabrics. I was just thinking, I hope they don't have the problem of catching on fire or exploding. I'd hate to have that happen to my shirt, especially if I was sitting on an airplane. Love the show.
Do you think he would be sitting on the airplane?
With
his
shirt?
That'd just be a weird place to sit. I mean, you'd think that TSA would be very upset.
Oh, you mean like on top of the airplane?
Yeah.
Not in the airplane?
Where I
saw it. I think he meant in the airplane.
Oh, in the airplane.
Yeah, you're being literal in that.
Am I?
Yeah.
I think I just went there. Okay.
Well, it was an exploding battery joke. What are you supposed to do?
That's what I've got. That's what I'm bringing to this.
I don't think, because it's not a lithium ion battery, that it would probably
explode. Your underwear probably isn't going to explode.
Now I'm being literal net.
Your viruses may explode.
Virus may explode. On to the email to TNT at twit.tv. We got one from Jack in New Jersey. He was among a spattering of people who wrote in and pointed out that Firefox isn't excited that H.264 is going to be royalty-free for end users until the end of time because, well, Firefox isn't an end user. We may have pointed this out or we may have missed it. I can't remember, but H.264 is only royalty-free for the end user. If you build software or if you make something that includes H.264 that you're selling, you're going to have to still strike a licensing agreement with MPLA. So couple this, he says, with the article earlier blog posting from the YouTube team of why they don't like HTML5, and it still doesn't look like H.264 HTML5 is a clear winner yet. I agree, but at the same time, H.264 just got a huge leap on WebM. When it's royalty-free to the end user, then end users are going to be very happy to shoot and record and upload from H.264. WebM still has a chance. We're not counting it out yet. But thanks for writing in, Jack.
Smash Bros. Boys writes in and says, "Hey, TNT crew, I was just listening to Friday's discussion about Google's introduction of Google Voice into Gmail and how this could possibly light the way for data-only plans for, like, Android phones, letting them use 3G or Wi-Fi to make Google Voice calls. And Leo brought up the idea of using Google Voice everywhere on iPod Touch with a MiFi, but then dismissed it as Apple does not allow it. Well, as it turns out, you can still use an iPod Touch with Google Voice. If you're lucky enough to have a Gizmo 5 account, you can connect SIP. You can connect this with Google Voice and forward all the calls to one of the SIP apps in the App Store. SIP, the protocol. Using Google Voice's website on the iPod Touch to place calls and texts, you now have a phone using an iPod Touch and a MiFi. Love the show."
That's a nice little workaround. So it's still a little clunky because you have to have one app open for receiving and a website open for placing calls. But I guess you just keep the one for receiving open all the time until it's time to make a call, and then you switch over to the website.
Of course, that's all you have to do. I mean, as it is always, there's a hack for that. And hopefully I don't know, does Google Voice do SIP natively? Or is it only because of the Gizmo 5 connection? I don't know.
That is a very good question. You know, I don't know what that new Gmail thing does, but it's based on Gizmo, so I would assume it's SIP.
Yeah, I would hope so. I mean, Google's the one that uses XMPP for the messaging, so you would hope.
All right, last email from Steven says, "I love watching your show and all the other twit.tv shows. I got a good chuckle the other day when you said when all the news was Microsoft back in the day, and then a day or two later, there was some coverage on the potential new Apple releases, and one of them was wireless syncing on the iPad, iPhone to iTunes as a new feature. But nobody realizes, or at least they don't mention, that this has been in place since the original Zune that Microsoft made. This is old news from Microsoft, and now it's something great just because it's Apple. I still don't get all the hoopla over Apple. I assume the Zune Sync will be in the Windows 7 Phone 7 also. Just my 2 cents.
We got a few emails like this from Zunies who are like, yeah, playlist, shareable, wireless syncing.
Whoopity-doo.
Yeah, had that for a long time.
They also had supporting.
To which the snappy person in me said, can you make calls with your Zune? But then he did say Windows Phone 7 probably have that, so they will eventually be right. able to do that. But yeah. still, that's a good point. Like, if that's what Apple's big announcement ends up being on Wednesday, like, the Zune people are going to be pointing and laughing.
Yeah. Just goes to show you how much tunnel vision you can have, though. You know, if you choose... I don't have a Zune. I don't know much about the Zune marketplace. I mean, I'm pretty much in the dark about that. That it's like, that could be completely unbeknownst to me that this has been available to all sorts of other people. And I go, wireless syncing? All right. We're in the future.
Of course, Darth Galt points out, we already point and laugh. Because you know what? That's how they roll.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for watching and listening to the show. Of course, you can catch more of Darren Kitchen.
Yeah, we're playing with the Android app inventor on Hack5, hak5.org.
Check it out. Also, you can give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. Leave us a voicemail, or you could record a video voicemail. Send us the link to the uploaded version, tnt@twit.tv. That's our email address for everything. And you can find us on the web with links to our wiki, which has our show notes at twit.tv/TNT. We'll see you tomorrow.